Bronner just goes running straight at me. He looks at me and he smiles, flicks the ball with his hand. The ball spins in the air, but I was transfixed on Brian. I sat back going, that's skill level. I've never seen that.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill. You can boost your winnings on the Sunday game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
Welcome along to Who You Got. We're looking ahead to the weekend's Premier League and WSL action. It's Owen here alongside Mick, Phil and Will. Let's get straight into it by looking at last week's results. Our predictions went pretty well for some people, namely Will O'Callaghan. What the hell happened here, Will?
I got two correct results, right. Owen, which appear to be the key to all this. Again, Colm says you're better off to probably get a few results wrong and get exact scores, having been the champion last year. I don't think there's any great signs to it. I just got a little bit lucky.
What did you get right?
So the two correct results were, was it 2-2 in the Arsenal City game? No, and then the other correct result was
Liverpool.
Yeah, it was 3-0, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There are two correct results. So
fair play.
Nice start to the weekend.
I presume that has bumped you up nicely in the overall leaderboard, which you can have a look at now. And yeah, there you are. Top of the table. Ger in second place. Shane in third place. Mick, you're not going too badly yourself at the moment.
Days.
Phil, what is going on? You're bottom of the table.
Yeah, yeah. It's early days.
Yeah, I am.
I know. I think even last week, there was a few results that were locked in, but kind of got denied in the last few minutes.
It's incredible when you have these picks, how much you realise sometimes when you've just called the game so right. I got the draw in City Arsenal in the men's game.
Yeah.
It was like pure luck. You know what I mean? I had 1-1. You get a point for it. That's pox. But in the women's game, I had a call like nearly to a T, 3-2 to Man City. Knew there'd be goals on both ends. Yeah. And it just could have so easily been that score. You know, it's you just watch it from a completely different perspective when you've kind of made the call.
Yeah, it's fine margins. So I wouldn't be getting too worried yet.
Right. But is there relegation in this?
We said there was last year, and then said we added two people.
No, I think we're going with the MLS model.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. That's probably better for all involved. The games you're previewing this week: United Spurs, Newcastle City, Chelsea Brighton, and we're going to have a look at Manchester City against Brighton in the WSL as well. So let's kick things off with Manchester United against Tottenham. And the scores this week look a little bit something like this. So everybody, no, actually it's very mixed to be fair. Colm's going for United win. Phil, Shane and Will are going for United win. Mick, you're going for a draw and I am going for a draw. That's what it says there. Give us your confidence on Manchester United, Phil and Will.
Well, watching Spurs this season, they're still quite easy to get at in terms. So I think their style of play actually suits the way United play. United aren't giving up as many chances, but they haven't been taking them. But I'm kind of just thinking that Old Trafford hasn't been a happy hunting ground for Spurs in recent years. And obviously they've won there, but they tend not to win there. So I kind of just went with that logic. And so there is just certain styles that will suit the way United play.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Spurs have that style.
Mm. Everyone seems to have won at Old Trafford in the post-Fergie era now at this stage. So Son Heung-min picking up the injury last night in Europe won't help Spurs either.
After we made all our picks.
And even I think the Manchester United game in the Europa League on Wednesday was even after most of us had submitted our picks. So we're going in somewhat blind, especially with injuries.
So would you change your mind?
No, I don't think so. No, right. No, I think for exactly as Phil has outlined.
So all our picks would be the same?
Probably. But look, the fact that Son is out since has made me more confident.
Well, they both have United.
Yeah. And I thought, again, you saw United missing chances during the week like they did last week as well. That would be the big concern, I think, if you were backing them going into this game. It's just their chance conversion rate is really, really poor. And also how silly the goal was that they conceded midweek. I know there's been a lot of criticism of Onana and the way he didn't get down to the shot. But you look at Eriksen giving away the ball. You look at Maguire's poor attempt to try and stop with the first tackle. Oh, just a really bad structure around the way they gave that goal away as well. So I think Spurs will get chances. I would have been thinking when I was picking for them to score that Son was their most likely scorer. But Dom Solanke has now scored in back-to-back games, so maybe he is the man to get on a run of goals at this stage and prove that he can carry his Bournemouth form into Spurs. But I do think that United will get it done. It might be a little bit scrappy, but I think United edge it.
Brennan Johnson is starting to score as well. I'd actually play him on the left instead of Son.
On the left, right.
Yeah, well, I prefer him there.
On the right.
Yeah, yeah, he started scoring and he got his goal from the right last night. It was a nice finish. But no, I do think they'll score. Are people really criticising Onana for
Oh, I saw it during the week. I saw an idea that he dived poorly, or he'd very poorly protected his near side when the shot was coming in.
Yeah. Look, it wasn't quite as bad as Dean Henderson on Mo Salah a few years ago, where he basically showed him the whole goal and said, if you want to just knock it in there. But, I mean, it's pretty hard to save a shot from 7 yards out when someone smashes it in, no?
I'm not, like, overly used to defending Manchester United or their players, given, you know, I kind of have a tendency to be just annoyed at how bad they are. But I find some of the criticism on Anna strange. I find I watch United nearly every week. He is a very, very good goalkeeper who makes the odd mistake here and there, the same as every other goalkeeper. But for some reason with him, it's always amplified as being this really big deal and a sign that he's flaky. You know, and I don't think he is at all, I have to say. I could be wrong, but that's certainly not my sense over after his first, you know, burst of games when he was kind of getting used to the team.
He's not exactly playing behind a brick wall of defence.
He's going to be exposed a lot. He just is, And maybe less and less if you know, if Martinez and De Ligt can build up a genuine partnership and are protected by whatever they decide to do in their pivot in midfield eventually.
Not Christian Eriksen.
No.
I don't think so. I don't think Christian Eriksen's been ever able to play that role, and certainly not at his age now. Like, you know.
Definitely not.
No. It's funny, we were talking about Eriksen during the Euros and about like how he can still, like, at a high level impact a game, and it's like because he's playing where he's supposed to be playing, and United never seem to deploy him there. You know, I know they've got Bruno, but even in other games, like, would it not be better off using Eriksen as their replacement number 10 instead of, you know, trying to fit him into the team as one of two in midfield? And all, it's crazy. Well,
I mean, you, like, we're talking about them not taking their chances. Look at the goal he scored the other night. Like, if you think back to that Denmark team that hockeyed us at the Aviva, they used to go quite direct and hope that Eriksen would pick up second balls or someone would pick them up and just give them to him. And if he's within 25 yards out, he's pretty lethal.
Yeah.
We both went for a draw. And I don't know if you share the reason with me, but mine is that I don't trust either team. I really don't. It's like the idea that you could back either one of them to go and do the job. So it's more than usual. I don't like the whole, oh, you pick the draw sitting on the fence because you're picking a score the same as everyone else. But in this case, it is sitting on the fence. It's just I don't know. I can't trust either team to go and get the job done.
And you wouldn't be particularly surprised if one of these two teams won 4-1 on Sunday either.
Absolutely,
so,
yeah.
It's I'm very indecisive at this stage of the season. And I don't trust myself either, which is why we've gone for the draw on that one. And which is why we've gone for a more egalitarian process when it comes to selecting our charity bet this weekend. So we've gone for the most common one, which is United to win and both teams to score. And on that front, I'd like to welcome Lee Phelps back to the show. Lee, how are you getting on?
Yeah, I'm really good, thank you. I'm pleased you've taken it out of my hands because we're 0-4 so far, aren't we? But I must admit, I was listening to you guys and looking at how that leaderboard sounds like two of the guys at the top there, Will and Shane, are both going 2-1 Man United as well. So
true.
I was going to lean that way. It's a... anything could happen now.
Yeah, follow the two smart guys is always a good idea, Lee, when it comes to this. What are you looking at this weekend?
Yeah, well, we've got the top Acker, which is William Hill's Acker on the 3 PMs each week, and it's been doing really well. It landed again last weekend, so anyone who's backing that is doing pretty well out of it at the moment. We're going in again for the 3 PMs this time round with Arsenal, Chelsea, Leeds and Birmingham all to win. Decent stats around all of them. You know, Chelsea are kind of almost like the surprise package of the season so far, aren't they? They did the double over Brighton last season. They're doing, if you look at the league results, you know, going back even to the end of last season, they really hit the ground running. Arsenal, of course, you know, they should be beating Leicester at home. They've got a great record against them. Leeds United, look, they're in decent form. And Birmingham as well. You look at their opposition, and they haven't won at St Andrews in 7 attempts. So I think it's strong. It's 5-1 top hacker. So those four teams all to win in the 3 o'clock kickoffs. But I think there's some fascinating games. You know, I think even, you know, we know we're not talking about it, but can't wait to see what a Rodriguez Man City do. And on this one, look, I know, you know, we're saying anything could happen with Man United versus Tottenham. I've put together a bet builder around this game because I think everything you guys have said there, I think you just touched on the fact that Spurs have shown some weaknesses, especially at set pieces. And one of the interesting ones is Matthijs de Ligt to score. He's had 5 shots on goal so far this season. He has scored. He scored against Southampton. So I've added him in to have at least one shot on target. So it doesn't have to be a goal. At least one shot on target. You get impact sub to help you out on that. If he does go off, the player comes on, carries the bet on. Bruno Fernandes has drifted back into a bit of a deeper role over the last 3 games. Him to have over 1 tackle goes in there. He's the leading tackler in the Man United team with 15. I think he's had 4 in those games that I mentioned where he's had to kind of drop back, and he had 4 tackles in the game against Spurs last season as well. I think both teams to score. I think everyone's gone both teams to score on the list, haven't they? There's one prediction that isn't both teams to score. Now, both teams to score is 2-5, so you know it's suitably short there. And I like the corners as well. You know, I think if you're looking at overs on the corners, over 9.5 corners looks good. Over the last, I think it's 6 games, these two teams have shared 78 corners. You know, it's like an average of 30 in the game. Spurs are the leaders in the corners this season. So, yeah, overs on the corners. I like both teams to score. I like Matthijs de Ligt, a shot on target. And I like Bruno Fernandes to have over 1 tackle. And you're getting double figures for that bet builder. And that's before any boosters put on. So I think there's some ways in here with the Man United Tottenham. You notice there I didn't stick to a result in that bet builder because I'm still not sure. But for the purpose of the charity bet, Let's go with the leaders. Man United and both teams to score is 12-5. Decent price.
Decent, yeah. Hopefully our luck will change this weekend with regards to that. Lee, great stuff. Thanks so much for hopping on.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers. That's Lee Phelps there on the line. And who you got is in association with William Hill. Remember, you must be over 18 and visit gamblingcare.ie for more information. So with Park United Spurs, there any final thoughts on that? Because I think we should move on to Manchester City at Newcastle United. Obviously, as has been mentioned there, Rodri's absence is going to be one of the key themes. And despite that, the majority of people here are going for a Manchester City win. Nathan and I are the only ones who are going for a draw. I'm not going to lie, I kind of regret this. Probably should have gone for a Manchester City win, to be quite honest with you. Like, I'm really...
Did you know that Isak probably won't play tomorrow?
The reason why I went for a draw on this one... I just remembered the game last season between Newcastle United and Manchester City, the Kevin De Bruyne comeback. And it was Oscar Bob, that brilliant pass and the finish in the 91st minute in that game, where I felt Newcastle should have got something from that, could have potentially won that game. Now, it's a different side this year, but I also think Manchester City were just about to go into that run last year as well, and they were probably in a better position. So that's what I'm basing this on. As the week has gone on, I'm less confident about this, to be completely honest with you. I think there could be a bit of a reaction from Manchester City losing Rodri, a bit of an angry reaction, and I think probably that there will be somebody who's going to suffer as a result of them putting up a number of goals at some point in the next few weeks. I'm just not sure it's going to be this weekend.
Yeah, I remember that game. The difference is tomorrow's an early kickoff. Atmosphere won't be the same. Newcastle are not playing with the same intensity, and there's a few theories going around that Eddie Howe just tweaked things in pre-season because he couldn't take another season of all these injuries. But what it's done is they're a little bit undercooked. And even the Spurs game, which they won, they didn't play particularly well, but they scored a couple of counter-attacking goals, which is what they did to City last season. Because I remember Bernardo Silva scored early in that game and he thought, City are going to absolutely wipe the floor here with Newcastle. It tends to be a tricky enough game for City, but they always tend to win. So that's kind of why I just stuck with them, even without Rodri. If there's one manager that's going to find a solution, it's Pep Guardiola.
Yeah. He'd be particularly happy he got Gundogan in just before the end of the transfer window now, which gives him that extra option in midfield now that Rodri is going to be out. The only concern I would have about City is just the reliance on the amount of goals that Erling Haaland is scoring. Like, it's great for Erling Haaland. He is flying at the moment and in tremendous form. But last week, even when Arsenal decided to block off the box in the areas that you want to get the ball into Haaland, and Newcastle are generally quite good defensively as well, they were resorting to players who are not well suited to taking shots, like Ruben Diaz, like Kovacic. And Kovacic could well come in for Rodri here. And City might struggle to break teams down a little bit. Rodri's actually a very important player, not just in terms of being a shield, but also what he can do and when he goes further forward into games. I think that's just going to be a big loss for them. But maybe Gundogan comes in, it absolutely slots in perfectly.
I was going to say, they need the secondary goal scorer, the guy who's going to get 8 a season. And you feel like when Gundogan finds his feet that he's going to be that guy, and then De Bruyne will chip in with a few, and then you hope that the wingers will score a few. And, you know, Savinho, we haven't seen that side of yet, but I think you probably will at some point as well, do you know? So my thing on this was just that I can't see Newcastle scoring, really. It's just that without Isak, their form has been strange this season. Phil kind of mentioned it there. They were in, I think people were talking them up a little bit, but anyone who'd watched their games were a little bit shaky on it because they just didn't think they were playing that well and they were getting some results. And then you kind of saw what happened to Fulham last week and you're thinking, that might be the real Newcastle this season. Yeah. You know, like that's... Now, they could go and get a result as it against Spurs or whatever, but City aren't Spurs, you know? And regardless of Rodri or anything else, I just can't see Newcastle just having the quality to last thing. And look, the Eddie Howe board stuff as well, that stuff has an effect. You know, there's an uncertain sense of the future there. And if you're trying to, you know, get the very, very most out of a team and total buy-in for a game plan from your team in a way that you need to against Man City, the way that for all the criticism of Arteta, you can't deny that he had the players in the palm of his hand last Sunday and they would do anything for him. Are you going to do that for Eddie Howe if you're not certain if he's going to go to England or if he's going to look for a way out because that's basically a broken relationship now? You know,
Do you think it's a broken relationship?
Well, that's seemingly a lot of the talk. The new guy, I can't remember the new guy's name.
Paul Mitchell, yeah.
That it just seems like there's just not a good working relationship there. And like that, you know, those things don't just get better, do they? Like if you're struggling to work with someone, it's only really one way that goes, like, you know.
But I'm not sure if that's rubbing off on the players just yet, though.
Possibly not, but I'm thinking if there's a sense around the club, and they're a lot closer to it than we are, so they're going to have more of a sense of it than we are. Yeah. If there's a sense around the club that something's not right, or that, you know, manager and board are at odds and it's all heading for a Clough-style departure, you know, then, you know, is there that intensity in what you are taking from the manager? It's just a question as opposed to a suggestion.
They definitely haven't been playing with that intensity, because one thing you knew in the last couple of years, especially two seasons ago when they finished in the top four, that when you went to Newcastle, they were going to put it up to you, like from the start. And I think they will probably sit back and try and hit City on the break, but I don't know if they'll have the quality to do it.
Harvey Barnes has been very good so far this year, and you'd remember that he wasn't really around at all last season. Like, so that's somebody that I think he came off the bench, I think, last week. But I think he scored so many goals now, you'll probably have to start him, I think, at this point. And, you know, there's still a good shape to Newcastle.
Yeah, Anthony Gordon, you know, like, obviously, is
Gordon, obviously, as well. Tonali's to probably get back fit. Bruno, like, you know, Joelinton, a lot of good players. Isak, if he's fit, they'll be fine. They will figure out a style and they'll figure it all out and they'll get enough points to be in the top eight that are miles ahead of everybody else at the moment, but struggling to see them beating Man City or getting anything against them.
Am I the only person here when the fixture was put down and who you got to check what time the kickoff was at?
Because half five at St. James Park.
Half five on Saturday, seems like.
Yeah.
Far hard.
Absolutely.
To go to St. James's Park.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, actually. It's to be honest with you, St. James's Park at half five on a Saturday is one of those things that's become one of the venues that I want to attend. Like, I've never been to St. James's Park, but like, if I go, it has to be an evening fixture or half five on a
half
Saturday.
Five, and then if they win, like, yeah, you just bounce out of the place and it's right in the middle. You can't miss it. Like, if you're in the city centre of Newcastle and someone asks you where St. James's Park is, you just say, can you not see it there?
Right. Yeah, you'll see it.
So it's half 12 Saturday. I think, like, I mean, I also agree with your
scientific
take.
I've seen Newcastle hopping at half 12 on a Saturday morning, though.
That's
I have
true,
to say.
Yeah.
I wouldn't worry too much about it there compared to
anywhere
else.
When I went, it was a 3 o'clock game, and yes, I can concur with that. At half 12, the place was hopping.
So that is Newcastle versus Manchester City. The next game that we're looking at this weekend is Chelsea versus Brighton. This is how the scores look. Most people going for a Chelsea win here. Will, you're reserving judgment on them just yet? You think Brighton are actually going to get something at Stamford Bridge?
Yeah, I mean, like, I've been impressed by Chelsea. Start of the season, we had real question marks about the recruitment, about the style of football, new manager coming in. And they've actually gone pretty well in the first half dozen games of the season. And Nicholas Jackson has perhaps compounded what we thought about him, where we thought maybe he wasn't going to score enough goals for them. He has become a steady supply as number nine. And it feels at this stage that even though they've been rotating a lot so far, the first 11 seems to be slowly but surely just starting to gel together for Chelsea. So I'm actually have been impressed by what Chelsea have done so far this season. On the other hand, Brighton have got just that little bit of something about them so far as well. Like even last week against Nottingham Forest, high scoring draw between the two teams. I actually could see this been something similar. Brighton have had a good time going to Stamford Bridge in recent seasons as well. I know we've got two different managers who are here. Even the styles have changed a little bit, but Brighton won't have any fear about going to Stamford Bridge. And I wouldn't be surprised if we had a bit of a shootout in this game and both teams take a point.
Yeah, Chelsea starting to look quite impressive, but you'd still have to say we're going to have to wait another month or two before we can fully trust this team, right?
Yeah, interesting. Their best performances have all been away from home. So I did kind of think about going for a draw because I could see Chelsea scoring but not being able to get a second, and Brighton are very good at coming back into the games. But if Chelsea play the way they did in the last few games away from home, they've been really clinical on the counter-attack. Jackson, you mentioned 50 games last week, 21 goals. It's not the worst conversion rate for a guy that a lot of people had already written off and almost mocked Chelsea for giving him his new contract, which ties him down until 2080
forever.
Or something. Yeah. Well, 2033, I think it was.
It's crazy. 9-year deal, right?
Perpetuity. Yeah.
But I thought his second goal last week was brilliant.
Yeah.
First one wasn't bad either, through the keeper's legs, but I loved the finish for the second goal. And then he obviously set up the third goal. So the signs are good there. I'd still have question marks about them defensively. Mm-hmm. So that's why I kind of went 2-1.
It is a team, though, for the first time probably in two seasons, that's starting to make sense. And you can see the shape. You know what players you're expecting. I heard Maresca talking during the week where he talked about, you know, two players for every position, but it was very much set in a here's the way we play. Mm. Here's our 4-3-3 kind of or whatever. And it's like, yeah, like at least there's a manager here who knows how he's willing to play, knows how he wants to play, is willing to stick to the plan, and knows what players it is. And suddenly, the insanely large squad gets a little bit whittled down. You don't think of it as so kind of like overflowing, I suppose, with players as the way you would before. So I think I think you're right, though, Owen. I think it's a while to go yet before you'd start trusting them against a top team.
They have a difficult
run
of games.
But I feel like they'll win this weekend.
They have a difficult run of games either side of the international break, which is maybe more of a test given that they had a lot of winnable away fixtures in recent weeks. But it is a good sign, as Mick said, that the first game they seemed to be very reactive to the way that Man City were going to play. And since then, Chelsea have started to impose their own philosophy on what they're doing. So
I'd actually as well look at the, you talk about the bloated squad and all that. I'm starting to look at that as a real positive now. And I'm starting to frame it in my own head as insane depth. That they changed their entire attack for the Barrow game midweek, and their attack was Nkunku up front, Mudryk, Neto and João Félix in the 10. Like absolutely insane quality in that attack. And all of them didn't start against West Ham and on Saturday. So I like, again, it's one of these things that you start to think about a team very differently just on the back of a couple of positive results. So it's a flimsy argument almost that we can start believing in Chelsea. But I'm starting to go there a little bit.
I think it's still slightly too much now. I think that, like, unless you're willing to kind of like set aside players and let them be unhappy, I think there's too much temptation for constant rotation when you've got that many players of a similar level. Mm. And, you know, you want it in about four or five positions. You want the rest of your team to be fairly settled, and you just don't develop, you know, that's like just develop styles and patterns and everything just by playing with each other constantly if there's always a different team out there. You know, I think that you do want some semblance of a settled team.
Yeah, definitely. I do think there has been some continuity from last year in that setup. Like, again, if we look at what the West Ham team is as their starting team, like Palmer and Jackson and Madueke finished the season very strongly last year. Palmer had an amazing season all year long, but Jackson and Madueke were playing together in that trio and all playing quite well. Now Sancho obviously is a new addition to that in the context of that team sheet for last weekend, so I wonder, has Maresca looked at some of the good work that Pochettino had done? And even though it felt like a summer of chaos, one of his big tenets was, let's actually stick to what went well in the last 2 to 3 months of last season potentially.
Yeah, but he definitely has a more definitive way of playing, and that can also be a problem where you have plan A and you don't have a plan B. But if plan A is going pretty well, you won't have to use plan B that often. In terms of this season, they do have Conference League where they can say to players like Dewsbury Hall, you know, here's a game for you. Cole Palmer's not even in the Conference League squad.
Is he not?
No.
No, didn't register.
No.
That is ridiculous. It makes sense. Like, I mean, it's ridiculous.
That's what you can do if you've won two Champions Leagues in the last 20 years. You know, you could sacrifice the Conference League.
Yeah. But it just does give certain players a chance to kind of get used to playing for Chelsea.
Yeah.
And the League Cup was that as well. Like, Nkunku scores a hat-trick. I found myself wondering during the week, how many balloons does he set out at the start of the season?
Did he do it three times, or did he do it for just one of the celebrations, the balloon? I didn't watch Chelsea versus Barrow midweek, hands up.
No, I watched Villa the other night.
I don't think it was on TV.
I saw him with the one balloon, but I'm wondering how many does he have down his sock as well?
Yeah, like,
because he's the same balloon.
I don't know.
These are the important questions that we really need to figure out before. Make it feel like you're not.
Is that the best thing down the sock since Sava from Fulham used to put the mask?
It's amazing.
Remember that, no?
Yeah. Sava, Gutierrez used to do it for Newcastle as well.
Griezmann used to have the confetti.
Oh, yeah. Yes, we'll see how the balloons go over the course of the year. That might affect our judgment on Chelsea as the games go by and the weeks go by. Does Christopher Nkunku keep balloons in his pocket?
There's a place there as well, because you don't feel like Jadon Sancho is going to keep up that level of form, is he?
Probably not, but it's interesting that he has been kind of elevated to that.
All he needs is a bit of love. That's what Maresca said.
Yeah.
Mm. Arm around the shoulder.
The final game that we're looking at this weekend is in...
Poor Brighton, never got a mention there.
Do you want to say something about
no.
them?
No.
Ferguson is obviously...
Well, Danny Welbeck's the best player in the Premier League, but other than that, yeah.
Yeah, Welbeck is... Like, his free kick last week, Pedro is going to miss this game.
Yeah.
But Evan Ferguson, I actually remember he played brilliant at Stamford Bridge a couple of seasons ago, but he got injured in that game.
Mm.
That's when Brighton were on fire and they were playing teams off the park. And that was the one where Nciso scored an absolute screamer.
Yeah, he is class. So is the expectation that Ferguson could be in line for a start soon? I know Welbeck is playing so well that he's got a... jump two rungs in the ladder at this point when Pedro's back.
He's off the bench at 60 for the next few weeks, unfortunately.
Yeah, but it becomes a form thing now rather than just a fitness thing, obviously, because he's not in their best 11 right now, unfortunately.
No, that's what happens, unfortunately, when you miss a bit of time with injury.
Brighton are featuring in the WSL fixture you want to look ahead to this weekend as well. It's Manchester City versus Brighton. It's a clean sweep. Everybody's predicting a Manchester City win. A lot of us predicted Manchester City win last week as well, and we were wrong, obviously. Even though, as you say, Mick, it could so easily have gone the other way and it could have been a City win at the Emirates.
Yeah.
Brighton looked good last week.
Could have been an Arsenal win too, though, I suppose. It was a great game, loads of chances.
Brighton started well last week. They won 4-0. Bit of a sterner test maybe than we might have expected if we were looking at this last week. Obviously, Manchester City heavy favourites for this. Brighton done a lot of business in the summer in signing Nikita Paris and Frank Kirby.
Yeah.
And then Kiko Seike, the Japanese footballer that they signed, she netted a hat-trick last week for Brighton. So she's one to keep an eye on. She's 28 years of age, so it's not... She played pretty much all of her career in Japan, from what I understand. So this is going to be a very interesting player to follow this season. Are Brighton potentially doing what they've done with their men's team and have uncovered a gem from the Japanese league, potentially, to bring into the WSL? I guess time will tell, but big underdogs this weekend.
Yeah, I think City... I fancied them to beat Arsenal last week. That could have gone either way. I mean, there was a few calls about the equalising goal for Arsenal, but then Arsenal had a perfectly good goal disallowed for offside. No VAR. These things even themselves out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think City, you know, we looked ahead to the season with Kathleen last week, and I mean, she was quite adamant that City are the team to beat this season. They absolutely destroyed Paris FC in the Champions League, 8-0 in aggregate. That's a team that deprived Arsenal of a place in the group stage last season. So it's just their attacking talent. Like, I think home advantage as well. The Emirates is a strange one where a few teams have gone there. Even last season, Chelsea went there and got blown away by Arsenal at the Emirates. So I would be leaning towards City to win the league as well. And that'll be a game that, like, you can't be dropping points against Brighton.
One thing that I think City fans will be delighted about from last weekend's game is that Vivian Medema obviously scored against Royal Club and so on, but just even talking to Kathleen, who, as we know, is a diehard Arsenal fan, and I was talking to her about the Emirates applauding her off and so on, and she was saying that's the best she's seen Medema play in a long time. You know, is that, like, you know, and obviously she's had injuries and different things, but she's only 28. So you add someone like that into the team. Like, City were bringing off famous players off the bench. And I mean that in a, you know, this is still a kind of a growing sport. Mm. We're not going to look at WSL teams and know every player on the pitch or, you know, even on the top teams yet. We're kind of getting there. But City were bringing on, like, famous players off, you know, and like that's the level of strength that they have. It's interesting though, Brighton, as you mentioned, on like 10 signings, you know, and they're getting them from different places. And I think there is a bit of kind of like Brighton style money ball going on there, which is really, really fascinating to watch. But you bring in someone like Frank Kirby as well, like, you know, who's like 70 odd England caps and has done it for a long time and is only 31 and still has a lot to offer as well, you know, like that gives them a lot of solidity as well. So I don't know. It's all very interesting to see teams like that growing, but City seem like they're ready to take another step again. Like,
I think it's too early for this Brighton team to get a shock against City. When you look at the quality that was on the field last week against Arsenal, even though Brighton had a good result. The Moneyball thing is interesting though, where particularly in the Women's Super League, there should be more value available than the men's game if you scout and recruit well, because the cost output is going to be that little bit lower as well. So it'll be interesting to see. Like, I think, again, it was Kathleen who pointed out the recruitment during the week when we were chatting about this game, because in my mind, this is going to be a very, very handy City win. You need a quick look at Brighton's squad and you're thinking, that's a really good summer that they've just put together there. But I back City's quality in this game, definitely.
All right, that is Manchester City versus Brighton. A clean sweep of predictions in favour of the home side this weekend in the WSL. Will, Phil, Mick, a pleasure. Thank you so much. That is this weekend's Premier League previewed with who you got. We'll be back next Friday.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill. You can boost your winnings on the Sunday game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.